fellow watch lovers, nerds, enthusiasts, or however you identify. You're listening to 40 and 20, the Watch Clicker podcast with your hosts, Andrew and my good friend Everett. Here, we talk about watches, food, drinks, slinkies, and other things we like. Everett, how are you?
I'm doing all right. It was a lot of noise. I didn't know.
It was an insane amount of noise. Not a slinky, though.
I'm doing all right. Yeah, it's been, I had a little sniffle this week, which kind of took me out of play, but it's going all right, man. It's going all right.
That's good timing for it, though. Everyone's gone.
Yeah, spring break colds are weird. Family's all down in California, so I'm sort of, me and Larry are rocking the homestead. Larry,
sick bachelors.
Larry being my 30-pound miniature golden doodle. Pretty brilliant dog.
Kind of a Tasmanian devil of sorts.
So yeah, I can tell I'm a little stuffed up. I'm a little nasally.
Just a touch.
I think it's going to be okay, though.
I think without you pointing it out, no one would have noticed. And now all you're going to hear is Kermit the Frog.
I've already got a Kermit the Frog voice. Back when we were in ROTC, there was a master sergeant who used to call me Kermit in classes because of the way I talk, which is probably one of the meanest things you can make fun of someone for, but it's fine.
Yeah, like a totally unchangeable characteristic about themselves. Yeah. He was an interesting fellow. I crossed paths with his battalion when he was a sergeant major. He was the ops sergeant major, who's like somehow scarier than the command sergeant major. Mm-hmm. I crossed paths with him and bumped into a couple of his Joes, and I was like, "How's Sergeant Major Galindo?" And they like locked up. They were like, "What do you mean? He is terrific. Thank you for asking." It's like, oh, he is scary.
I dare say we must have talked about Todd Galindo on the show at some point in the past. Giant, like vaguely Asian, tattooed man with scars on his face that had likely seen way more shit than anybody has any right to see.
Yeah, he was like Pacific Islander and Hispanic.
Yeah.
It's just beautiful skin.
And also, like, I don't know, 6'3", 6'4", and just big yoked. Yeah.
But made of muscles and not feathers.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Mostly muscles. Enough about that, because we're not here to talk about...
We could talk about Todd.
Todd Galindo. We're here... If you know Todd Galindo, say hi for us.
Yeah.
I doubt anybody listening does. I mean, the odds are low, but if you know him, you know him.
You know him, too.
Say Everett and Andrew said hi.
He won't remember. Too many TBIs, I'm sure.
Say Twitchy and Kermit's.
Yeah. And there it is.
We're here to talk about watches, Andrew. And
we are.
And I think we got a good lineup, man.
Ooh, we do have a good lineup. We have some interesting stuff. Do you want to start or do you want me to start?
I want you to start because my cell phone's stuck in my pocket.
Oh, no. Stuck-in-pocket cell phone. Oh, and I have to start because I have none of your links pulled up yet. Where do I want to start? I know what I'm going to start with. I want to start with a totally outside of the realm of ever for me watch. Blancpain has been doing some 50 Fathoms releases over the past 3 years, 2 years. Over the last,
I think,
short history, yeah. Like recently, right? In the last 2 years, there's been some 50 Fathoms releases, some updates, some minor case changes, some dimensional changes, generally speaking. and we have two new ones out right now. One in rose gold, which is like, makes sense. You got to drop this in rose gold. The one that actually got me excited is full titanium. Because what a perfect material to be doing the 50 Fathoms in. Like, that's the only way you could actually make this watch better, unless you could fix the size, but then you're compromising the watch and then it's just a whole thing. In titanium, and it is lovely. It's a 50 Fathoms though, right? It's part of their Act 1 70th anniversary model. These are a slightly different case. These are the 42 millimeter case with a, we gotta get to it, 42.3 diameter, 14 to thick, so 40 thick, red gold or grade 23 titanium case. This is the first time I've seen grade 23 titanium. I've only ever seen 1 through 5.
Yeah.
Is this like, maybe they're using the metric system?
Yeah, I'm not sure what
maybe,
that means.
Maybe centigrade system?
Some sort of metric.
I don't know. Either way, it's different than other titaniums we see, I think, not being a metallurgist, but and not doing any research into the grading of titanium ahead of this, because that's not what we're here to talk about. We're here to talk about the fact that 50 Fathoms is now available in titanium, which is terrific. And it's, you know, it's 50 Fathoms, 300 meters water resistance, the same dial you know and are familiar with. Comes in 3 strap options, a nylon strap, a tropic strap, or a bracelet. The rose gold does not come with a rose gold bracelet. That's not an option. And the titanium bracelet will cost you $2,500, which is kind of...
just whatever.
Yeah.
It's a drop in the bucket.
It's sort of, yeah. And here's why it's a drop in the bucket. It's $19,300 titanium on the bracelet. $34,300 rose gold on a deployant strap.
Yeah, it's interesting. The $19,000, the almost $20,000 for the titanium makes the $34,000 on gold seem like a good deal.
It kind of does.
I mean, it really doesn't, but it's but funny.
You know, you don't. It makes it a little easier to swallow. You're like, oh, it's only $10,000 more to get this in rose gold. Like, let's splurge a little bit today.
Yeah, a few mortgage payments.
But yeah, it's lovely. It's a 50 Fathoms in titanium, which I think is a perfect color metal for the 50 Fathoms.
Yeah, I saw these and I read a little bit about, because in fairness, I don't know anything about Blancpain or the 50 Fathoms. I understand that their movement work is really, really, really good. And that they're doing cool things. And that their movements themselves are really good. I think this is a hard, it's a hard sell for me. A $20,000 titanium dive watch that's chunky and kind of weird.
It's a anniversary watch
and an icon piece.
You know, it's for the Blancpain crowd.
Yeah.
This isn't a, oh, this is an interesting watch. It's for people who want Blancpain.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, the movement is beautiful on this rose gold one with the sort of gold outline. I mean, it's gorgeous. I think maybe you have to know, like you said, you have to be looking for this watch.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cool. Andrew, I've got a dive watch that we're never going to buy that I'd like to talk about.
I had this one open. I know exactly what you're talking about. And I was like, this is interesting. And I kept scrolling and got to the end of it. And I was like, holy fuck, no wonder it's interesting.
So Singer is a company that's been kind of a big deal in cars. They're a car company. And they've also been around making watches for a few years. So I think in 2017, they introduced the Track One watch, which, I don't know a lot about. That was kind of before you and I got involved. It's very interesting. It's a very interesting looking racetrack watch. It was before I got involved in watches, so I missed it, and I haven't really tracked Singer as a watch company, but I saw this thing pop up today, in my feed or last few days, and I was like, what the fuck is going on here? So, this thing is not like any other watch I've ever seen ever. So so when I first saw it, my reaction was, oh, dive watch with a weird case. And then you start to get into it and you're like, what? Wait, no, what? So the dial does not actually have a time of day timekeeping feature. So by looking down at the dial, you cannot tell what time of day. Rather, what it has is this like dive cycle timer, which gives you, it's got three categories. One of those is dive. One of those is chill. And one of those is fly. So I understand what that means is there's a period of time between dives that you need to sort of rest. You can't be diving. And there's amount of time after a dive before you can safely fly due to...
That's the chill period. You can fly, dive, and then you got to chill before you get back on an airplane.
I think it's chill before your dive, dive, and then wait X amount of time before you can fly.
Yeah,
that's the way I understood it.
Yeah, you need 18 hours is what I read here. I don't know. But
and so this is a watch actually for us to, I think, talk about intelligently. We need to have someone like Frank, but we're not going to for this show. So I'm just going to say this thing is really weird. Oh, and it also keeps time, but it keeps time on a horizontally viewed module that exists underneath the bezel that you can, by tilting your wrist forward, look at on the side of the mid case underneath the bezel. I don't know who this thing is for.
The idea of this is to replace a dive computer. It's to do all those functionalities as a mechanical tool, because divers still use dive computers because they are objectively better at doing things than a dive watch. And this takes all those tools and lays them out as a mechanical watch.
It doesn't have a depth gauge.
No, but it has a way to time your depth.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm just saying, I think that's actually what people use dive computers for. I'm not taking anything. I think this thing is so interesting that I don't dare criticize it because it's not like anything I've ever seen. It's beautifully finished and crafted. The dial is beautiful. The bezel is beautiful. The case is... I'm not going to talk about dimensions here. It's fucking huge.
Yeah, it's a dive computer.
And it doesn't matter. I just think it's epic. And again, I talk about all the details, but I don't really know what I'm talking about. It has a helium escape valve, blah, 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 blah. It's got this weird red tab thing that's interesting. Really getting into the nitty gritty here. It's just crazy. And then when you turn it over and you look at the movement.
It's fucking gorgeous.
This is called the Asian graph. It's an automatic movement with 72-hour power reserve, mostly notable due to its architecture with a central 24-hour chronograph function and jumping indicators for both minutes and hours. It also incorporates, I'm reading from Monochrome, by the way, it also incorporates a novel clutch mechanism that marries the chronograph to the gear train, relying on friction for seamless operation. And there's a link to more notes about that movement. But when you look at it, it looks like it's got about 13 billion parts and about 30 exposed rubies. I mean, this thing's fucking crazy, dude.
Yeah.
It's crazy. Now, to Andrew's point, 85,000 Swiss francs, not something you're going to pick up for a casual trip to the Bahamas.
and if you're the type of person who's going to drop 85,000 Swiss francs on a casual dive trip, I know two people who are excellent companions.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's sort of absurd to think that this is anything besides a flex piece. And that's okay. That's okay. I'm not criticizing that, but this is not a practical thing. They've really pushed this thing for its practical capabilities, but given the price more than anything, it's not practical. And that's okay. That's okay.
No, it's still fun.
It's fun.
And it's really lovely.
It's one of the most interesting watches I can remember seeing ever, actually.
Certainly of the year.
I mean, I can't even, you know, there's some MB&F stuff that I'm like, wow, you know, or even Autovac, whatever. But this is more interesting than any of those. I mean, it just, for what it's doing and how it's doing it and how it's moved things around and how it defies your expectations. And then you look at that movement and you're like, oh my God. Yeah, this thing's crazy. Of course, I don't want it.
No.
I mean, it's not something I even want.
I have no use for it.
But I love it.
If I had a shoebox of 85,000 Swiss francs and was told this is to buy this watch, then yes.
Yeah.
I'm going to have it.
That's right.
It's only got a 72-hour power reserve, so I don't know what I'm going to have to do with it.
I will give you this 85,000 if you buy this watch and only if.
Deal. Deal.
What's up?
Next up for me, this is a brand that I'm not really familiar with. The new Draken Peregrine is out. And this is a really interesting watch. So Draken Peregrine, New Zealand-based company, began on Kickstarter in 2018. Kind of missed the mark with size. They dropped this big, bulky, field-inspired watch. They were like, let's clean it up a little bit. This watch is still a little big. It's 42 millimeter, kind of that field pilot ambiguous zone, right? Because of the dial design, the case design, it's sort of a bit of an identity crisis. But what drew me to it was the color scheme on this black dial. It's got this really great blue accents on it. Peregrine is at the 6 o'clock in this, what do we call this blue?
Yeah, I would call this a cornflower blue.
Okay, cornflower. I'm good with that. That same matching second hand, your Cardinals, your 912-3 have that same blue triangle. Power reserve indicator at the 6 o'clock, which is the first power reserve indicator that I've seen that I've been like, yep, I'm okay with that. I don't need it. I don't want it. And in fact, you can remove it. But the execution of it is terrific because it's super, super, super subtle. They replaced the markers, I don't know, what's that, 2 minutes on each side of the 6 o'clock with your indicator with a little red bar at one end to say that's the low end.
You're getting in trouble.
Yeah.
You're almost in trouble.
Wiggle.
I'm sitting on your dresser and you can't see me, but it's getting serious.
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of silly. The font on this is kind of weird.
Yeah, I like it.
But I like it. It's perfect. It's like just that combination of really true to a vintage-inspired dial with just a splash of modernization in it. Crown left on this thing. Great angles on the case. The movement in here that they're using is the Miyota 9130. I could go for 10 more meters of water resistance because we're only sitting at 100. And for this style of watch, I really do think you need to do better than 100, especially at 12.75 thick.
Yeah, it feels like it would be a 200 meter watch.
Yeah, I think that the technology is there, and to not do it, I do know why. And they're not doing it because on a bracelet, these are $479 on pre-order. Their market price is going to be $600. This is an interesting small brand watch. And this is kind of like, this reminds me of 5 years ago when you have all these brands popping up and doing kind of similar, but kind of just unique stuff. This is like OG small brand stuff. I like it.
Yeah. I mean, this has the feel of a 2018.
Mm-hmm.
Of a 2018 sort of overbuilt micro brand to me, but you can see there's refinements along the way, but they haven't given up on their roots, which is to say, you know, you have that really sort of starkly machine shop knurl on the crown. You've got, you know, big chunky lugs and facets. You've got that huge, it looks like probably a 4 or 5 millimeter rehout
It's big.
Collapses down into the, you know, so you've got, and you know, the angular hands. This has got all of those elements of a 2018 micro brand. And yet it's refined. You've got female end links. You've got really beautiful proportions. 1275 is a little much, but whatever. It's a big watch, 42 millimeters, but it's not so big as to be.
But I think for this kind of pilot-y field watch, 42 works. You know, this is kind of the, like, what's it, the type B with the triangle and the two dots.
Yeah.
Kind of type B dial. Like this works.
Yeah, it's cool. I don't hate this at all. And I agree with you. I really like their incorporation of color. I even like that pop of red on the stupid power reserve indicator.
It's just, yeah.
Wiggle. Yeah, 42 and 22. I mean, this feels really 2016, 2017 to me, but not, no, I don't mean that to disparage it. I actually think 2017 is cool again. So good for them for carrying that torch.
Huge rotor.
Speaking of, I don't mean to cut you off.
Yeah, speaking of, fuck me. continue.
Speaking of 2017 is cool again. sorry, Andrew.
You're the worst.
Last year, Longines introduced the Hydro Conquest GMT. It's fantastic. It's lovely. I love it. And then this week, they introduced a follow-on to that. So with the 41 millimeter Hydro Conquest GMT, you think, okay, and the natural move is to go introduce a 38. Longines said,
No, we don't.
We're going to give you a 43 millimeter Hydro Conquest GMT. And all right, I'm here for it.
It's super Longines.
I'm here for this. So this is a Flyer L844 4.5 caliber, which is a really, really, really neat movement. If you haven't read about it, you should. I mean, it's whatever. It's a GMT. It's a Flyer GMT. But they're doing this, a Flyer GMT in a $2,400 package, excuse me, $2,800 package, $2,775. And this thing seems to be exactly where I would expect it to be, given Longines sort of emphasis on quality these last 3 or 4 years. I feel like Longines has dropped banger after banger after banger. You know, we talk about, I think for a long time in the enthusiast world, you had Oris, you had Zinn, and you had Tudor that kind of led that mid-range or that entry-level luxury world. And then you had other brands like, you know, Tissot, perhaps Longines, Raymond Weil, that are like kind of known in the industry, but like eschewed by the enthusiasts. I think what we've seen in the last several years is Longines come back and be like, we're still fucking rad and look at what we can do.
We've never left the table.
We never left.
Yeah. Open your eyes, fucker.
And man, I'm feeling this. I'm feeling this. So look, it's a 300 meter water resistant Hydro Conquest GMT that's now bigger. So, and I think what we're seeing is that people want bigger, right? I mean, is that fair, Andrew? I think people want bigger.
I think some people want bigger. And I think for a watch like this, bigger isn't necessarily better, but this at 43 is way better than this at 38.
Yeah, it plays. Yeah, I agree with you.
A dainty, chunky tool watch doesn't make sense.
You know, I read an article on Worn Around about this that suggested that this is Longines playing into their non-enthusiast buyer of Longines. I'm not totally sure that I agree with that assessment. I mean, it must be at least partially true, but I think that there is an enthusiast market right now for bigger, no shit watches like this. Great GMT movement. You know, the only thing I didn't find on this, do you have a Z dimension on this? So it's 43 by 49.
Ooh, I didn't look.
I assume this thing's got to be coming in at, I don't know, 13 plus.
I'm imagining 13 and a half.
But I can't verify that because I haven't seen, let me see. 12.9. 12.9. So it's 190 grams, which
it's going to wear pretty thin because of that curve in those in the lugs, and just the right amount.
And at 43, that thins the case out a little bit too. I mean, mm-hmm. look, this is going to probably wear like a Seamaster 300, you know, with that GMT. This is a killer watch. It's a killer release. I think they did great. This thing comes in three colorways. So it comes in a black on black. It comes in a great sort of like ocean blue on blue with mm-hmm. some lighter blue highlights. And then this like olive.
Neon yellow, neon gold.
With a bit of Fotina, which I don't hate in this context.
White would have looked poor, like just bad on that.
Yeah, I think that's right. Man, I don't know. Hard to say.
I think it would have taken away from the richness of that like really interesting green.
I think the blue is really the winner from this group.
I agree. I think this green is far more interesting than Tudor's blue.
Yeah, this is a cool drop. I dig it. I'm here for it.
24 hour ring on the bezel.
Yep.
Dive bezel.
24 hour ring is on the rehab.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not on the bezel.
Sorry. It's got a 60 minute just regular dive timer on the bezel.
I like it. I want to try one on. I don't know that this is for me, but I still want to try one on.
Does skis do lunging?
I don't know.
Be worth a pop in there, see if
they do this. Grand Seiko though.
Yeah.
Okay, next up for me. Ooh, I want to talk about a new release from Veyer, which is not a brand that we've talked about in a while. And Veyer is doing like kind of slyly just expanding their catalog and like, oh, we're going to add this. We're going to add this. We're going to add this. These interested me. This is from their R1 racing line, and they've just dropped a line of three chronographs inspired by vintage racing, and they are all the colorways that you would expect. And they did them really, really well. So the first chronograph is the R1 USA racing chronograph, cream 38 millimeter. I love the 38 millimeter size on these tonneau cases, like no bezel, just every bit of like the 60s and 70s of just a slab of metal coming out of a CNC machine, or like perhaps a dude on a lathe. Throw the flush crystal on there. The cream bezel is what really sings to me. So it's cream bezel, 369 sub dials, a yellow second hand, black 3 o'clock sub dial, white 6 o'clock, and a vertically bisected red and black subdial on it. They're using, what are the movement they're using in these?
It's got to be a VK.
It almost is certainly VK.
Mega quartz.
Yeah. So probably the VK64.
This is mega quartz, not mecha quartz. Let's see. You know, For being a watch company, does not do a great job listing their specs on their website, Andrew.
They do not. And I think because they are a watch company that appeals to non-watch people and watch people alike, they do cool enough stuff that we kind of forgive their oddities. There's a black dial and a all black dial. These are fun. And Veyer is a brand that is like constantly interesting to me. Some of the stuff they do that I hate, a lot of the stuff they do, I like. I like that they do American assembled watches and Chinese assembled watches. I like their cross section of automatic and quartz options. I think this is a cool release. These are, you know, vintage inspired chronographs that are attractive, affordable. Like this is kind of our bread and butter space. This is the kind of stuff that got us started into down the road of like really cool shit.
You know, so you specifically brought up the cream dial version of this. I'm looking at the black dialed version.
Is it the black on black or the black with very colors?
Black with lots of colors. So this guy.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the panda, they're calling this. So it's a black dial with panda accents, a big white chapter ring or cream chapter ring. The thing I am kind of blown away by this watch is that depending on what strap it's on, with a black strap, the dial winds up looking really black. And then on a lighter strap or a bracelet,
it shrinks it. Yeah.
It shrinks it and makes it look a lot like more colorful. This is a really, they've done a really good job with their colors here. Making it interesting.
I looked at that and I was like, wow, that's stark contrast.
Those are actually just different watches.
Yeah, those are different dials. That's why that is such a big contrast.
Yeah, this is a cool watch. And you're right. This is sort of 40 and 20 bread and butter. I think this, I would have zero reservations recommending this to someone.
Mm-mm.
This is a cool watch. And it's a strap monster too, dude. This thing looks great on everything.
Yeah. FKM, the bracelet on it is good. I've never, gosh, I don't know if I've ever had a Veyer in hand.
I have had a number. I've met the owners on a number of occasions. Yeah. Really good dudes.
Too bad they don't come on our show. It's because of you.
I bet they would if we asked them.
Yeah, they already talked to me and they said if Everett's not there, we're down. I don't know why they would say that. It might have been due to your numerous meetings.
All right, I've got another watch to talk about.
Do it.
So this is a moon swatch.
You know, several months ago we said that it was going to be the last moon swatch we talked about.
Hey, well, we got to talk about this one because this is the coolest moon swatch. Omega / Swatch dropped the coolest moon swatch. They did it. You thought you had, you know, I thought my mission to Mars.
Omega.
I thought my mission to Mars was the one. It's not. Omega dropped an all white party, Snoopy moon phase. This is actually called the Mission to the Moon Phase moon swatch, and it's a banger. It's a banger, right?
It's good.
It's good. So this has a moon phase. Moon phase being represented by Snoopy on the moon.
On a half crescent moon.
On a half crescent moon. Also there's a Woodstock phase to that. I'm not sure that I've seen that phase though. I mean, look, it's an all white moon swatch. It's non-limited. It's $430, which is a lot. You know, whatever, but it's a moon phase.
Ooh, the loom on the moon phase disc is so good.
And there's a secret message. I can't sleep without a nightlight written in there. I mean, you've got the moon image has a paw print on the back. This thing's. It's cute. I don't even like a Snoopy watch. But also, yeah, you got to have this. Oh no, I said 430. It's US 310. Yeah. I don't know why I thought 430.
It works for me. I think I agree. It's the best moon swatch. It's cute. It's also looks really good. It's a really subtle Snoopy imagery. Iced out white. This is good.
Yeah, I mean, this is the best one, right? This is the best one. Boy. Yeah, this is a good one. They did it.
This is now we can be done with them.
There's no moonshine gold to speak of, which, you know, I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, but.
But now we can officially be done with the moon swatch.
I mean, or not. Just keep dropping bangers. I'm fine with it. This is rad. In the spirit of swatch, more is more. I think this thing is awesome. The only thing I do worry about with this, I do worry that it's going to get dirty. So,
oh, super fast. The strap is going to get yucked. And
the white strap on my moon swatch is pretty hard to keep clean. And I don't wear that thing all that often or all that hard, but it's definitely a bit tricky to keep clean.
Well, and the bioceramic is almost like, it's almost like a resiny texture when you touch it.
Yeah, the mid case actually hasn't gotten dirty. It's really the strap that's gotten dirty. So I don't know. We'll see. Yeah, this thing's cool.
Good release.
That's all I have to say about it. Yeah, we don't. I mean, we've talked about the moon swatch ad nauseum, but
next up for me, titanium's a thing this year.
It sure seems to be.
We're into March, and we've had, you know, well over a dozen new titanium drops. This is the Squala Master Titanium. Oh, sorry, Squale Master Titanium 120 atmosphere 65th anniversary watch. And you know what? It is just in titanium. And it's great. It's great. Getting into the dimensions real quick. 41.65 millimeter case, 16 thick, 48.9 lug to lug, grade 5 titanium. So everything we've talked about, barring Blancpain, is grade 5 titanium. Do you think it's possible that they're using titanium 5 times greater, or is that like a, it was the, they're like a computational error where they meant to do grades 2 plus 3 to be 5? That's still perplexing to me. Brushed ceramic bezel. It's 120 atmospheres of water resistance, 1,200 meters, and it's lovely. Titanium is such a good looking metal for this watch. It's got that sandwich dial, like just, I'm for it.
Yeah, you know, I think we, or at least I tend to think of Squala in terms of sub-homages. And the Squalas that are not sub-homages are flawed, either because they're just kind of like older designs or whatever.
They're like Doxa. They haven't changed, or even Zodiac. They haven't changed their designs in 50 years.
But also, like, haven't refined. You know, their Squala does a great job with making a good watch, but they're just not pushing the needle in terms of watch design. And so it's cool to see them take a minute. You know, I will say,
like 4 o'clock bezel and a helium release valve. This is cutting edge shit.
I will say this is really, even still, not the most refined case. And that's okay. It doesn't need to be. It's a neat release. It's not an homage. It's beautiful. It's kind of spendy. $2,500 for this guy.
You know, $2,500 though for an all titanium 1,200 meter ball and dive watch, I think that's in the zone.
Okay. Titanium grade 23 is similar to grade 5.
Oh, because it's 2 plus 3.
But has lower oxygen, nitrogen, and iron. It has better ductility and fracture toughness than titanium grade 5. So I think that these are both sort of superior alloys, and their composition's really close. But 23 is just a little bit less shatter prone.
Just didn't get as much gas in the chamber when they were doing all the ionization and smelting.
Yeah, perhaps. It seems to me like they're very, very close.
Which is probably why it's 23. It's 2 plus 3.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So this, I mean, titanium aside, Salita 201 Labrie grade, grade 5 titanium.
I'm it, for it. This
it's
is
a cool watch. The dial is really interesting.
Yeah. So it's this.
Is it a sandwich dial?
It looks like a sandwich dial, and
with like brushed applied edges to
in lieu of markers, and it almost. I mean, it probably is not a whole loom disc underneath the dial, but it could be.
But you don't know that it's not.
Yeah, yeah, it very well could be. But yeah, so in lieu of markers, we have, you know, a sandwich cutout with applied hollow markers to expose the loom on the meat of your sandwich.
This is a great HK skin diver type. Yeah, yeah, this thing's cool.
I'm typically underwhelmed by their watches, but I saw this, saw that it was in titanium, kind of looked a little bit closer at the dial. I was like, you know, I'm down with this. This is a big, chunky, no bullshit tool watch, and you could do anything you wanted in it and just never worry.
It's 16.
It's the thick bitch, it's right?
16 thick, yeah. Mm-hmm. Which, okay.
Oh, so the lower base disc is it's an entirely loomed disc.
What? Okay. Mm-hmm. All right.
I don't know why. That seems unnecessary.
Maybe it's easier to do the whole disc.
Just dunk it and move on with your day. Yeah.
Yeah.
I like it. Little splash of red at the 6 o'clock. Or the Squala Master, just the master part of the Squala Master logo.
I don't really understand. So wait, is it 120? No, it's 1,200 meters.
Yeah.
120 atmospheres.
Yeah.
I was thinking 120 meters. I was like, I don't get it.
No.
120 atmospheres.
Yeah.
Which is
1,200 meters.
A lot.
That's a deep diving watch. It'll outlast me.
I'm like, all right, 16. Okay. I'm okay with this thing.
Yeah. Okay. You're like, I'm 16. I'm like, it's 16. I was like,
120 meters. Why does it need to be 16 and a half thick? Okay.
It's for all the layers of dial.
Fine.
That loom disc is fine. Thick. Fine. It makes sense. And you know, it's obviously not going to be for everyone. Cause this is a thick, you know, this is a super deep diver.
Andrew, did you know that in 1999, a couple of guys circumnavigated the globe in a balloon?
On purpose?
Yeah. So Bertrand Piccard and Brian Jones, the first two men to circumnavigate the globe in a balloon. They did it in 1999.
That seems really, really recent for such like antiquated technology.
you'd
think that'd be like a mid 90, like at the latest, like a 1950s accomplishment. But if you're doing it in the 90s, it's like, hey, no one's done this before. Why don't we?
Yeah. Yeah. It was like, I wonder if has anyone ever done the globe in a balloon?
We could do it, man.
Let's do it. Anyway. I don't know anything about balloons.
Of this happening. Now that we're talking about it, I'm like, I remember this like event and it being exciting. But now I think back on it, I'm like, that's way too late, man.
All right. Okay, so it's fine. So to celebrate not only the 25th anniversary of that circumnavigation, but also the 140th anniversary of Breitling, there's been a bunch of Breitling releases, a bunch of 41 millimeter Navitimers that everyone's like,
Breitling's lighting it up right now.
All right, whatever.
And we all know sketchy dudes wear Breitling, and I kind of like Breitling, which I think might make me sketchy.
This is 140th Annie Aerospace, mm-hmm. which you know I'm here for. You know I'm here for the aerospace to celebrate the 25th anniversary of Piccard and Jones circumnavigation. It's got an orange dial with a kind of like an ombre orange with a Breitling Orbiter 3 logo on it. I think that's the colorway and the logo for the mission. It's look, it's an aerospace, which means it's fucking rad. It's everything you'd expect from an aerospace. It's got a display, or maybe not a display case back, but a see-through case back where you can see through to a piece of the actual balloon, which is to say this thing's limited.
Yeah.
Because, but here's what I like about this. So it's an aerospace, $4,700. This is like, or I guess $4,900 on a titanium bracelet. This is like the right price for this. It's got the B-70 movement. Yeah, I want this watch. All titanium, titanium bracelet, orange ombre aerospace with a piece of balloon in the back. I want it.
Didn't Around the World in 80 Days, wasn't that like, didn't that happen in the 19th century?
Fly in a balloon? Yeah, I think maybe. But I don't think they did it all in a balloon. It was just one segment. Yeah, I like this.
This is cool. This is... I'm totally for it. Never mind the novelty of having a scrap of the balloon in your watch. The dial is phenomenal. This Anadigi color scheme, it like reeks of the 90s, but modernized. Mm-hmm. And did you mention that it's in titanium?
It's all titanium. It's an aerospace. It's titanium. Yeah. Fuck yeah.
Titanium's a thing. This is... it looks a little long. What's the lug to lug?
I think it's like 50 on the lug to lug. It's a big ass watch, 42 millimeters. So
this reeks of like 1990s arms dealer. And I'm for it. I could do this.
Yeah, I'm for it. I want it. It's an aerospace, $4,700. Like, and you can probably fucking buy it even though it's limited because it's Breitling. It's an orange Breitling.
Yeah, it's going to be limited for like the next 7 years.
Right.
And then the last brand new and boxed one will be purchased.
That's right.
It's good. And you get a piece of the balloon. You'd hang that up on the wall.
Andrew, is there any other watches that you'd like to talk about?
You know, I want to mention something.
Yeah, right. I know what you're going to mention.
No, you don't.
I do.
Tony Bennett? You did know. The estate of Tony Bennett is going to auction. And I'm not going to talk about all the watches that are available, but there are, his watch collection is among the items that are being auctioned. And some of these are just, well, all of them are gorgeous, right? Because they're Tony Bennett's watches. And many of them were gifts. So there's personal engravings on the back, diamonds, sapphires. The one that is just kills me is this Cartier to Tony, thanks, Frank A. Sinatra. And you can tell that this watch got worn.
Yeah.
A lot. And it's just beautiful. It's nicely aged, but still really well cared for. It's a Pasha chronograph from Cartier. Plain steel from the 90s, bronze dial. This looks like it's far older than the 90s, but whatever.
Yeah, that's a 90s Pasha. Yeah.
a watch from Lady Gaga. Like just a good representation of the impact that Tony Bennett had in the industry around. And these watches are going up for auction. You won't be able to get one. I won't be able to get one. It's cool to see them. It's cool to see some like close-up pictures of these rather than like the smudgy images that we get from the paparazzi. Like, watch sighting, Tony Bennett wearing Pasha Cartier, probably the one Sinatra got him. It's cool to see these pictures, these watches in lot photography state. Yeah.
Yeah, Tony Traina did a great write-up on this on Hodinkee.com. And a link will be in the show notes.
Maybe.
Andrew, we didn't get to everything. No. There's a few watches that I thought I'd talk about that I didn't.
Rarely do.
You know, that's...
There's a Mido release for their 80th anniversary. There's a...
Some new Timex Qs that are really cool. Mm-hmm. We'll drop a link to the Timexes in the show notes.
The Timexes are cool. We might save them for the next roundup because this is some good additions. The queue line is getting cool. It's also getting a little weird. They might be done. My battery in my queue died. I went to put it on the other day and it was dead.
Yeah, I mean, that's a quartz watch. That's what happens.
I know, but I went to wind it. Nothing happened.
You're shaking it.
Wiggle! It didn't come back to life. I still almost wore it, though.
It was fucking... Andrew, other things, what do you got?
Oh, so I started a new show on Apple TV, and I saw a trailer for it a few weeks ago and kind of just forgot about it. And I was scrolling, looking for something to watch, and I saw the tile for it, and I was like, ooh, yes, I want to watch this. So the series is called Manhunt, and it's a mini series, very much the way HBO used to do, like single season mini series, right? Mm. Do you remember those days where you got like 9 episodes of a show, and then I was like, thanks for playing, that's it.
Like True Detective, or
Or I'm trying to think of other shows.
I think
Band of Brothers and the Pacific are good examples, they experimented with that mini series format.
Generation Kill.
Yeah.
One of the greatest shows of all time.
Another good example where they were experimenting with the mini series format, which I think is a really great format for specific things. And I think this story is the perfect story for a mini series because it's far more deserving of 9 hours than of 3. So Manhunt is the story of the hunt for John Wilkes Booth and his accomplices immediately following the assassination of Abraham Lincoln. And they tell this story in a really fascinating way. So it starts in, we'll call modern time, being the time that the show is set, when Abraham Lincoln is still alive, breathing. It starts with the receiving the surrender of the Confederacy.
Hmm.
You get that. And he's excited. And Edward Stanton, Secretary of War at the time, who was close friends with Abraham Lincoln, is there, and they're rejoicing. And then you get some flashbacks. And then you get some kind of contemporary flashbacks, like 3 hours ago over here. And it's a little bit hectic. You can't second screen this. You have to be paying attention because
there's a lot going on.
There's a lot of movement through time and space, because a lot of things happen simultaneously. So the assassination attempt on Lincoln was also in conjunction with 2 other assassination attempts. One was not carried out, and the other one was failed. So they're telling these stories, and you have to view it in, at one time. You can't triple screen it. But it's great. Some of the casting decisions are a little silly. I won't go into them, but then you see people on the screen, you're like, that was the wrong person for it, and I'm sorry for you. You just don't fit. Like, you're just wrong here, and everyone knows.
Interesting.
Even but other casting decisions were great. The acting is really good. The story is really good. We have 3 episodes out right now. It's going to be a 7-part series. It is absolutely worth a watch. It's great. Like, the costuming is great. The cinematography is great. And they do a really good job not making, like, they don't demonize Booth and his compatriots in a way that you'd kind of expect them to, nor do they humanize them. It's like a pretty objective, like, this is what happened. These are and obviously with, some artistic license on conversations and stuff, because nobody knows exactly what happened. But there's nope, this is him. This is his ideology. He is not a hero, nor is he a demon. He's just a person who holds these beliefs. I think they did a good job of that, because it'd be really easy to super dramatize him and make him this huge, enormous bad guy, because he was a huge, enormous bad guy. But that's kind of I don't know, that's played out and boring.
Yeah, when it's lacking nuance.
Yeah, but they did it's very good so far. It could fall off a cliff. I don't know. It could suck eventually.
You're 3 episodes in?
3 episodes in, and I've enjoyed them all. The first episode I had to watch twice because I was second screening, and I got to the second episode, and I was kind of like, I think I've missed some things. And it's cool because it's like, I don't think they shot on location. I haven't looked into that. But it's like, I've been into the Ford Theater. I've seen these things. And if they didn't shoot on location, they're set construction was just phenomenal. Cause I'm like, that, I know that. Like I've stood there. It was cool.
I like it.
It's good. It's definitely worth a watch. It's a good period piece. It's quick moving too. It's not like it doesn't drag you along. The story is well paced so far. Unlike some other, some other mini series where it's been like, just happen already.
Can something please happen?
Yeah.
I'm ready for something to happen. Well, Andrew, I've got another thing.
Do me.
And I'm excited about this one. I think it's going to be fun. But first, I'm going to get some freebies out of the way, okay?
Okay.
I watched three movies. Dream Scenario.
Oh, yeah. You've been on a binge.
Spaceman. And Ricky Stenicki. I watched all three of these. All three of them were good.
Is Rock... Spaceman, the Harlan
Space Williams Man, one? No, Spaceman is Adam Sandler. And he's a spaceman. He's a cosmonaut. It's very good. Anyway, so I'm just going to briefly mention those. I watched all three of those movies. I think all three of them are like mediocre reviews. I enjoyed all three of them.
Mediocre reviewed movies are some of my favorites because it doesn't catch the critics and it doesn't catch the people who want to second screen it.
It's either going to be bad or it's going to be good. One of those two things. I would say,
you should review movies.
For all three of these, I really enjoyed them. Ricky Stenicki, I think is what it's called. Ricky Stenicki is awful and also really, really funny and good. And I really enjoyed it, the entire thing. So, I'll move on. So here's my other thing. Last week,
that looks funny.
It's funny. John Cena.
It's on Prime. Did you have to rent it?
No, it's on Prime and it's available on Prime. John Cena is fantastic. He's fantastic.
John Cena might be a good actor.
He is wonderful in this. And he actually makes the movie. Zac Efron is in it. He's whatever. John Cena is incredible. It really, really funny stuff.
So, I think it's because he comes from a professional wrestling background.
It's not my other thing. I'm moving it along.
Okay.
Okay. So last week I talked about a knife I picked up. I bought a knife and it was, I think, strangely, one of the most, some of the most feedback we've ever gotten on an other thing.
Last week was the bug out, right?
Yeah. So I bought a Benchmade bug out. It's the carbon fiber Gucci bug out. I love it. I've been playing with it and flicking it and handling it. But being me, I did the thing where I was like, you know, this is a knife and I really like it. I bet there are other knives I would like. And
wouldn't you know it?
Wouldn't you know it? So I have gone and bought four knives. I bought four knives that I'm going to talk about on the show. And I'm going to talk about one per week. So I'm going to do a thing where I talk about the best EDC knife for me. And I'm going to do that by procuring these four knives. I want to be really clear because some of you are knife people and some of you are going to have opinions and some of you are going to judge me. Let's be clear on a few things. One, this isn't a goal to find the best EDC knife, right? The goal is not to objectify the best EDC knife. That's not what I'm doing here.
That's a totally futile goal too.
I'm finding, so what I've done is I've looked at the available knives and I've selected four that are interesting to me. Okay. Mm. So just let's be real clear. That's what I've done here. And I'm going to talk about all four of them and I'm going to share my thoughts on all four of them. So that's point one. Point two, I don't know anything about knives. I don't know anything about materials. I don't know anything about metals. I don't know anything about grinds. I don't know anything. I don't know anything about fucking knives. So take
Everett just wants a sharp fidget spinner. That's what he wants.
That's what
I want. Ninja stars are out of the question.
And so all four of these knives are kind of similar in size. They're all in that roughly 3-inch blade length. None of these are honkers. None of these are mini. They're all like medium EDC knives. Okay. So tonight I'm going to talk about the second one. I think three of these.
Is the bug out among your four?
The bug out's among my four. The bug out is number one. Okay. So tonight is the Spyderco.
And are these? Oh, so that one is in your lineup?
This one's not.
Okay.
This one's
because that's not.
I've just pulled out a tool roll filled with knives.
That's not an EDC knife.
That's right.
That's like even on the large side of a tactical knife.
So what this is a Spyderco Sage 5. This is actually a discontinued version of this that has like a carbon fiber G10 laminate handle, which I think is fun. But the Spyderco Sage 5 lightweight is essentially the same knife as this with a little slightly different scale material. I found this knife after watching 8 billion YouTube videos.
I dropped off birthday cake at his house on Monday and he was watching YouTube videos of knives.
It's true. It's true. I'm sick. I could barely breathe. I had a terrible headache and I was watching knife YouTube videos.
Eating birthday cake.
Let's find some dimensions on this.
It's currently out of stock on the Spyderco website. Dimensions on it are tech specs. Overall length 7.13 inches for those of us in watch world, 181 millimeters. Blade length 3 inches. CPM S30V steel.
So this is a Crucible S30V steel, which is not anything fancy. It is just a very, very good run-of-the-mill steel. I think 5-10 years ago, this was a very high-end steel, but steels have come a long way since then. It is a compression lock, which... Go ahead.
I don't like it.
So compression locks are, Andrew said, oh, it's a liner lock. And I said, no, it's different than a liner lock. It's a compression lock. Mechanically speaking, it's different. But in terms of the way it actuates.
Frame lock is what I called it, because that's what I call it in my head.
Yeah. So, and this is different than a frame lock too, but the mechanically the way it works. Actually, so the Spyderco Para 3 is probably one of Spyderco's most famous knives. It's also a compression lock. The blade shape on this is a little different than the paramilitary blade. It's more of a leaf shape with a curvy top. Mm-hmm. But just
the grip on it is phenomenal.
So
I want a spine lock on this though.
The ergos on this knife are incredible. So compare that. We're comparing knives. So compare that.
The clip on it's fantastic, though. This is like crazy light.
Compare the ergos. So the Benchmade is a really, the Bug Out is a really sort of, I don't know, I think it's fair to call that a boring knife, but it's also not like doing anything super well. The drop point blade is beautiful, but it's kind of a boring knife. Comparatively, the Spyderco has this like, and so Andrew, you are actually gripping that thing choked down.
I know, yeah.
So because of the finger choil, mm-hmm. you can get all the way up on the blade totally safely. It's a really, really fun knife. And I picked it up and I was like, ooh.
I really like the cutout in the blade of Spyderco's.
Yeah, that famous hole
is just like the torque that you can put on the blade super comfortably is unlike any other blade manufacturer.
Now, and I think that is sort of the thing people like. I think if you've only seen pictures of a Spyderco, you might be like, eh, I don't know. They're kind of ugly. But then you pick one up and you're like, oh, okay. I kind of feel it. I will say the Spyderco is half again as heavy. I think you've got 2 ounces on the Bug Out and 3 ounces on the Sage 5.
It's super noticeable though.
In their base models, they are about the same. The Spyderco is like 150 for the lightweight and the Bug Out's like 170. The Spyderco is full steel liners, countersunk steel liners that have been milled out. So you get a really, what you get is a more substantial knife. It's again, 3 ounces versus 2 ounces. I don't know that that's a huge difference, but you do notice it in the hand. but it just feels like a, it feels like more knife mm-hmm. when you have it in your hand. You're like, oh, okay. It's sort of confidence inspiring. In fact, I think one of the things that people don't like about the Bug Out is how light it is. I think the Bug Out sort of feels like it should be flimsy. Now, there's been a number of YouTubers that have tested it, and it's just not. It's a very tough, incredibly robust knife, but it feels flimsy. And I think that not everybody likes that. You pick up the Spyderco, that Sage 5, and you're like, ah, I get it. This is a much more substantial feeling knife. I don't know that that means it's tougher. In fact, I'm sure it doesn't, but it does feel that way. It's more confidence inspiring. So between these two, I really love them both. I as I sit here today, don't have a winner between those two. And I'm not sure I'm going to pick a winner between the four of these. I've got one of the other ones now, and the other one's coming. One of those of the other two is not going to be a surprise. And the other one, I think, is a dark horse.
I think these two knives do very much the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
The prime difference between those is that if you pull out that Benchmade at work to open an envelope, no one's going to go, whoa, a knife. You break out the Spyderco, people are going to do that. The Benchmade looks like a letter opener, like a stiletto, kind of like a very
a bit more gentlemanly,
refined, gentlemanly. Like people are gonna look at it like you pulled out a case sod buster,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, oh, that's a knife that is perfectly appropriate for exactly what you're wearing right now. Spyderco comes out of jeans.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah, no, you're 100% right.
And it's because of the blade shape. It's because of the grip shape. I think it's a lot more comfortable, but I'm not sure if it's more functional.
You think the Benchmade's more comfortable?
No, the Spyderco, yeah. I think, is more comfortable because it's got a little bit of curve to it, which is half of Spyderco's knives look like half circles when mm-hmm. they're open.
Yeah, that's right.
But it's just because of that grip lets you get some purchase on it.
Even when they're closed, they've got a
very pronounced footprint. Yeah,
I would say both of these in the pocket disappear. They're both super light.
Oh yeah.
Both of them have a deep carry clip. The Benchmade's probably just a touch deeper, a little bit more of the Sage 5 sticks out, but it's hardly noticeable. Yeah, they're both really cool. I really like them both.
The deep carry on the Benchmade, I think, is a little bit more flush because you don't have that same curvature in the
It actually winds up sticking up just a little bit higher because of the placement on it. Both of them,
you can't put it any lower because of the shape of the grip.
No, I will say for a lefty, the Benchmade's truly ambidextrous. The Sage 5 not. They both have reversible clips, but because of the compression lock, left hand actuation. I think that might be what you don't like about compression locks. Because for me,
I use. Every knife I've ever carried has been in my right pocket.
Oh, you're a right-handed knife mm-hmm. carrier. Okay, well, maybe not.
Yeah. I use like kitchen knives left-handed, but utility knives right-handed. That's a weird thing.
Andrew, we've talked about this. Andrew's weird about his handedness.
I'm broken.
Andrew, here we are, hour eight. I've
shocker.
Part two of part three of the EDC watch journey will come next week.
Knife, not watch.
What did I say?
You said EDC
don't
watch
worry,
journey.
Don't worry. Part three
I'm not worried.
Of the EDC knife journey will come next week.
All right.
Andrew, anything else you'd like to add before we hang them up for the day?
Nothing the people need to hear.
Hey, folks, I want to thank you for joining us for this episode of 40 and 20, the Watch Clicker podcast. Do me a favor, check us out at our website, watchclicker.com. That's where we post updates and articles and reviews and other fun stuff on a weekly, bi-weekly, tri-weekly basis even. If you want to check us out on social media, you can do that on Instagram at WatchClicker or at 40and20_WatchClicker. If you want to support us, and oh boy, we hope you do because we need it. Look, we need it. We got to buy microphones and software and hosting. You can do that at patreon.com/40and20. That is how we get all the money we need to keep this thing going. patreon.com/40and20. Check it out. And don't forget to tune back in next Thursday for another hour of watches, food, drinks, life, and other things we like.
Bye-bye.